pomodoro is the word that you would say for tomato in Italian. Pome means apple. Doro means golden. So it's like the golden apple of your garden. Pomodoro. A little one would be a pomodorini, and a regular one would be a pomodoro.
Doom, do, 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 do. That's my mom, and this is episode 20 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Plant friends, holy moly cannoli, we made it to episode 20. 20. I am just so overwhelmed with the gratitude and love for you guys for tuning in every week and giving me the opportunity to share this show and these planty conversations with you. This show was a little seedling of an idea which seemed insurmountable at first, but the more I thought about it and cared for it, the more it grew, and now I open iTunes to Bloom and Grow Radio and I see 20 episodes chock full of amazing conversations with incredible planty people and information that I've learned to help me and my plant babies, and I hope you and your plant babies bloom and grow. It has just been a wild ride so far, and I'm so excited for what's to come because I have some incredible things currently germinating for Bloom and Grow Radio. Nothing to announce quite yet, but I'm just going to say the next couple of months are going to be very exciting, so stay tuned. One thing I can announce that I'm beyond excited about is Summer Rain Oaks, our guest from episode 4, is having her next plant swap in New York City. It's happening on April 14th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Lululemon Hub 17, and I am going to be moderating a panel with Health Aid, Kombucha, Gotham Greens, and the New York Department of Sanitation. It's going to be awesome. In addition to the panel, we're having an epic plant swap, which is going to be a great opportunity for you to get some new free plants. What better way to get plants than for free swapping them and to make some new plant friends? As of today, Summer Rain said that there are only 10 tickets left, so if you haven't already, make sure to get them. The link for the tickets is going to be in the show notes and in my Instagram bio. So, this listener appreciation feature is incredibly special to me. The Instagram account and person, Sarah Sipos, posted the most beautiful, thought-provoking post that really brought me to tears that I wanted to share with you guys. So Sarah writes, "Your hobby should intimidate you. This realization hit me while listening to an interview with the host of my favorite houseplant podcast. Maria was talking about feeling intimidated by caring for her plants, but she gave it one more shot. With little successes building her confidence, she ended up with an urban jungle in a matter of months and a deep love for plants that inspired her to create Bloom and Grow Radio. Everything I've grown to love has felt intimidating. Motorcycling, gardening, cooking, travel planning, photography, skiing. Nothing has come naturally to me. They've all been trial and error learning experiences. They demand practice. They require failure. They summon fear. They also bring my life joy and fun and connection and excitement. Nothing compares to the sensation of breaking through the overwhelm, building up confidence, and mastering something new. Feeling fear and doing it anyway is the recipe for being brave. Girl, yes. I'm thirsty for knowledge. I long for growth. What about you? I bet there's something you're intimidated by right now. I bet you're on the cusp of the very thing that will light a fire of inspiration and take you on an exciting, happiness-filled new path. Buy the houseplant you think you'll kill because five others have died on your watch. Learn its name, research it, observe it, and it will tell you exactly what it needs. Plan the trip, paint the canvas, cook the recipe, take the class. There's so much life to live on the other side of fear. You've got this." Oh, Sarah, thank you. Thank you so much for your vulnerability and sharing that post. I am so incredibly honored to have been a very small part of the epic journey that got you to write something like this. And there's just nothing more perfect than my 20th episode to share this post because the thought of me helping empower you guys to take little steps like that, even if it's something as small as getting a plant that intimidates you, those steps add up to major shifts. So, wow, just thank you. I'm just so thankful to all of you, and I'm so thankful that I get to do this. Okay, enough mushy stuff. We are talking tomatoes today. And not only are we talking tomatoes, but we're talking them with two of my most favorite tomato experts, Craig LaHoulier and my mom. Yes, that was my mom that you heard in the little teaser for the show today. So Craig LaHoulier has had a successful career as a chemist in pharmaceuticals, but Craig began a new career after he retired as being one of the leading experts on growing tomatoes and celebrating the many varieties that exist in the world today. Craig is an advisor for the Seed Savers Exchange and the World Tomato Society. He's the co-leader of the Dwarf Tomato Breeding Project and the author of the book Epic Tomatoes and Growing Vegetables in Straw Bales. Those are two separate books. He is also responsible for naming and popularizing many well-known tomatoes such as Cherokee Purple. He joins us today to discuss how we, as urban jungle dwellers, even in the smallest apartments, can still grow tomatoes from seed on our windowsills, and he shows us how to do it. After my chat with Craig, my mom comes on the show, and she joins us to chat a little bit about what being Italian and growing tomatoes has meant to her. It feels really special to have my mom join me on this 20th episode. Number one, just because she's my mom, and I love her so much, and she's my role model, but also, when I was first starting the show and not knowing whether it would take off and other people would listen, I would often just say to myself, you know, worst comes to worst, me and my mom will listen to the first few episodes and it'll be great because, like, we'll love them. And 20 shows later, you're listening to them and I actually get to bring my mom on the show to share her gardening experience with you. So it's just a beautiful full circle moment. Okay, I know this was a long intro, my plant friends, so let's get to the plant chat. Here is Craig. Welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio, Craig. I am so excited to have you on the show today.
Well, I am very excited to be here, and it's just a privilege to have been asked to appear and to share whatever I can do to help people experience the joy of tomatoes.
Yes, my plant people who live in apartments, and I've had so many requests to learn how to grow tomatoes from seed. So do you want to just give us a short idea of your experience becoming the tomato expert and author of Epic Tomatoes? What kind of turned you on about tomatoes and led you down this path?
Yeah, I can actually do that. Let's see how quick I can do this. Small child who had a grandfather and a father who loved to garden. So they would, by bringing me to parks and gardens, showing me flowers, that got me interested in a very early age. And then my grandfather, when I was in my teens, grew the first tomatoes that I loved. When my wife and I got married in 1980, the following summer was our first garden together, and we have now had 37 gardens, and tomatoes have been the centerpiece. And it's tomatoes because it's this magic combination of the number of heirlooms and varieties. You can grow 10,000 types of tomatoes if you're a member of the Seed Savers Exchange and you have access to that huge collection. All of the colors, sizes, shapes. As a chemist, I love food and I love to cook. And just that morphological variation of the colors and sizes and the flavor nuances make it fascinating. It's easy to save seeds from. It's easy to start seeds yourself. It's not a trouble-free plant, but more often than not, you can get a good crop out of it. And all of the stories, you can bring people into the garden and give them a virtual history lesson, telling them the backgrounds of these wonderful heirlooms. So the tomato really kind of tapped me on the shoulder because so many people have been so generous with these rare, unique varieties in their families that I feel like I had no choice in the matter. The universe has conspired to make me the tomato dude for better or for worse.
I love that. The Tomato Dude. That's your next book. That's the title of your next book. So I would love to kind of just dive in. So obviously, you know, you were on my good friend Joe Lample's podcast and you guys had an amazing conversation about starting seeds with all the fancy words and all the fancy equipment and all of the space, I think, was what I really envied. So for a person living in a very small apartment, I guess the first two questions that I would ask you are, since you are the tomato expert in variety, what would be the varieties of tomatoes you would have us choose, and how do we start?
Sure. So as far as varieties, the news is getting better and better for space-challenged people. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we've been selling varieties locally for 20 years, and that was the most frequently asked question of, you know, I'm going to be growing on my deck or my balcony. What have you got that tastes great?
And at the time, like a windowsill.
Right. And at the time, there wasn't much. So we put together a breeding project to now put 90 new dwarf-growing varieties. So these are ones that grow about 3 feet tall, and if you could fit a 5-gallon container on your balcony, you can have good success. But then there's the micro dwarfs, which are just starting to get attention. And these are tomatoes that will grow in a 6-inch pot. They'll reach maybe 6, 8, 10 inches tall. And even though they may not have the supreme flavor of the big, you know, 10-hour-a-day sun-grown beefsteaks, they're fresh tomatoes that you're growing in a sunny window. I'm working with some people right now to see how they're expanding the colors, because there's a yellow one and there's a red one. The red one's called Red Robin. The yellow one's called Yellow Canary. And there's others on the way, and we're trying to see if we can work in stripes and, you know, the greens and the purples and get the flavor up. So I think the prognosis for people who are confined is going to be only improving all the time. And I would imagine you do have some listeners that may be able to grow a tomato in a 2 or 3 or 5 gallon pot if they've got a sunny balcony. And the news is spectacular there now, because we do have those 90. I mean, you can essentially grow a Cherokee purple-like tomato in a 3 to 5 gallon pot and have it be absolutely delicious. You just need 6 hours of sun a day and a place to put a container out in your balcony. So things are looking up there.
So 6 hours of direct sun, like I'm also just thinking in terms of windowsills and stuff, like southern-facing light only, or if you have a northern-facing or east-west, would that be okay?
You need sun to get any kind of a good-sized tomato to grow well. But okay, if you're really sun-constrained and you stick to cherry tomatoes, then you can have reasonable success. So, you know, for example, the tomato Sun Gold, which everybody loves, right, it is a tall growing variety, but if you can get it into a container and keep it watered and fed and give it a few hours of sun a day, and it doesn't matter what direction the sun's coming from, you'll get some really nice flavored Sun Golds. And, you know, as far as the height, you could always prune it to keep it size constrained. You can train it around and, you know, use string to maybe wind it up a banister or wind it up a pole. So, you know, anybody after listening to the show that has some questions on it, I am really happy to look at pictures of what people's situations are and to help them strategize best in a custom sense. How can they make that little bit of space work for them to grow a tomato plant to success?
Oh, that's awesome. Maybe I'll use you to consult for my balcony garden.
Sure. free tomato consulting. You cannot beat the price.
I love it. That's awesome. So just one more question. These micro dwarf plants that you're talking about, which I would imagine if you only are working with a windowsill is what you would grow.
Yep.
Are those kind of exclusively cherry tomatoes? I would imagine those are all very small actual fruits.
Yes, they are. They are cherry tomatoes. Okay. Although we are working to get the size up to maybe golf ball sized or a little more. So a lot of this is fairly new research, and it's not constraining it, but what's slowing it down is that the genetics of those micro dwarfs are actually even more complex than the 3 foot tall large fruited dwarfs we're working with. I'm growing about 18 or 20 different types this year. So by the time we hit autumn, I will have a much better idea of how things are coming along. And at the end of the day, you know, there could be some seeds to share for people to experiment with. They won't be totally stable yet. They won't be on the market, but there will be things for people to try to see if they can make them work for them. And the feedback back to our little project is always invaluable.
Wow. So I guess we'll have to have you back on next year for an update. So where do you suggest getting the seeds from? I know you're a huge advocate of seed catalogs. So what are your favorite ones, or what would you suggest?
Well, for the people who are looking for the micro dwarfs, they're really constrained to just a few different varieties. And, you know, looking at a pine tree, looking at tomato grower supply, a victory seed, even some of the bigger ones, well-known like Johnny's, they're probably going to find a lot of the same varieties and a lot of the same catalogs.
Okay.
So, again, the best thing would be to if people have a real question and looking for specific types, they can send me a note, or I can look at a web page associated with this and answer questions on there to help people in the right direction.
People could ask questions on the blog associated with this podcast if they have questions.
And I would say look for Red Robin, look for Yellow Canary. Red Robin is by far going to be the easiest, and it's just it's the cutest, most amazing little plant. To see this thing that looks like a house plant that will give you 2 or 3 or 4 dozen tomatoes if you grow it in a sunny window. And
they taste
fine. I mean, they're not going to be dancing in the aisle flavor, but they're a heck of a lot better than grocery store, sad tomato flavor.
Like organic, like good tasting salad. Yeah. You can throw them in salad or with some basil from your basil plant right next to it.
Yes, absolutely.
I love it. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. So we get the seeds. Maybe we get the Red Robin seeds.
Yeah.
I come back to my apartment, and what is next?
So even though Joe and I may have sounded like one could write a PhD thesis on seed starting, and you can, I mean, you can crack open beers, you can have a blast talking about it, but when it gets down to seed starting, there are some just basic essentials. Number one, light is not needed to germinate tomato seed. And you can think about that. When you plant a seed, you cover it with soil, and light's not getting through. So really, one hint, if you're germinating any kind of seed for small-scale gardening, only when they say sow the seed on the surface does it mean that that seed needs light to germinate. Now, warmth is very helpful. So you need a container of any sort that has a hole in the bottom. Okay. And since you're in an apartment and you're doing small scale, now I start everything on a sunny window on a table in my office. And right now I've got a 1 by 2 foot space taken up, and I'm going to start 2,000 tomato plants in that space. So it's not... You can do a lot of seed, not that anybody that's listening probably wants to go that crazy, but you know, if you've got a dozen eggs, poke holes in the bottom of those little egg cells. Get your yogurt containers and poke a hole in the bottom. That's one, anything that holds soil will do well.
Oh, right, because I saw the egg, you could do the egg carton and poke holes in the egg carton and grow them in there. Okay.
Yeah, one of the big critical success factors is what you put in there, and it's good to start with one of many brands of, you would call it a sterile seed starting mix or a seed starter, and just some of the names, you know, SunGrow makes one called Metro Mix, Hoffman Seed Starter, Johnny's Selected Seed sells one, Pro Mix, Burpees makes one. You go to a Home Depot and you'll see one there. You go to a nursery and you'll see bags, but it's really you want a soil-less mix.
Okay, so say I'm like very low maintenance and I have one bag of potting mix that I use for all my houseplants.
Yep.
Pretty much are my tomato seeds not going to make it if I use just a normal potting mix? And you would really strongly recommend using that sterile seed starting mix?
Well, if it's a potting mix, as long as it's not a potting soil.
Okay, but so, it needs to be soil-less.
Soilless, yeah, because what happens with just a potting soil is it has more clay in it, and it doesn't it both absorbs water a little bit less well, but then when it dries, it can crust a little bit, and it can just the young seedlings just don't breathe quite as well in it. But I'm thinking anything that you would use for an African violet, which is usually a very fluffy mix,
right? Fast draining mix.
Yes, a fast draining mix.
Okay, cool. that's great to know. So we've got the sterile seed starting mix and then warmth. Let's talk about warmth.
Sure. So some people find it's warm on top of their refrigerator or warm where they dry their clothes, or they've got the sun coming in at some point during the day and it's warm. If somebody were doing this on a larger scale, they would probably just buy a single temperature mat to
right,
put it on.
Right, a heating mat, right?
But if you've got one, great, use it. If you don't worry about it, because like I said, it's just getting that warmth. And what will happen is the seeds will germinate, but the warmth speeds it up. So typically, if you plant your tomato seeds shallowly, like I said, and you've got it kind of a nice warm spot, we're talking 68 to 72 degrees, you'll see tomato seeds germinating in between 3 and 6 or 7 days. And if it's a little bit cooler, it may be 7 to 10 days, but don't freak out, it will be fine. Even tomato seeds that are up to 10 years old to 12 years old should germinate just fine. So if maybe, you know, you've grown tomatoes somewhere and you moved to a smaller apartment, you've still got material, grow it. It should be just fine. There's always more in a pack than you need. So usually when you buy a packet of seeds, you can plant those for 5, 6, 8, 10 years out.
That's cool. And at this point, you still don't need the light. While they're germinating, need the warmth more than the light.
Need the warmth more than the light. So at some point, and what I like to do is actually flip that little plastic every day.
Hey, plant friends. Craig is referring to the plastic that you put on top of the soil once you've put the seeds in it. We had some technical difficulty during our interview and lost a small chunk of the conversation, and that's when he was describing putting the plastic on top of the seeds in the soil. Back to the interview.
Because what will happen is it's covering a moist environment and little bubbles of moisture will form. Moisture can often lead to fungal growth if there's spores around. So if I flip it each day, then the top that's facing upward will dry off, and you're always going to have a dry side where the seedlings are germinating up into. Now, you will then see growth, and as soon as you start seeing growth, you can remove the plastic, mist it with water a little bit, but that's when now you're going to want to find some light. And if you've got an artificial light that you can lower onto that little pot somewhere, you know, a lamp with a neck where you can kind of bring it down and have that light bulb maybe 3 to 4 inches from those little seedlings, great. If you've got a window that gets sun, great. And what you've got now is that you're probably going to be growing these really short plants like the red robin. If you did want to grow out on a balcony in a 2 or 3 gallon container and you had a little bit more room and you wanted to separate these seedlings out, you can do that once they're about 1 or 2 inches tall. And if you've planted multiple seeds in a particular pot or cell, you don't really have to snip tomatoes to leave the strongest plant. They transplant very easily and very well. So you can actually just remove them after they're a couple of inches tall into individual plants and just put them into individual containers if you want more than one plant in your apartment, or you can pot them up and give them to friends and things like that. From that point on, it's all about light and getting them just growing in the best lit place you can. Maybe once they get 2 or 3 inches tall, you can switch what they're in to more of an all-purpose planting mix rather than a seed pot starting mix. But if you do have bags of mix that you've used in the house for African violets and other house plants, and it is a soilless mix, I always like to stick through that through the life of a plant.
Okay.
Just because you have less problems with diseases and such.
That's smart. Okay, so let me just, for my very novice brain, kind of go over this again. So you get the seeds.
Yep.
I've got my little egg carton. I puncture holes in the bottom of it and I fill it with soilless potting mix and I dampen this potting mix, right?
Yes. Yes.
Then we put the seeds on top of it and they're not sitting on top. How far are we pushing them in the soil?
Not pushing them in, you're just putting them on the surface and then covering them by sprinkling some dry planting mix over them until you can't see them anymore.
Got it. And then covering it with the saran wrap.
Yep. Do a little spray, do a little mist with water first. Mm-hmm. So you want to So you want to dampen that dry mix that you just sprinkled on, and then cover it with your saran wrap loosely. You don't tie it down tightly. Just drape it over nice and loosely, because what you want is those seedlings to come up, for them to just to be able to push up on that a little bit.
Right. And so at that point, light isn't important, but we need to make sure that there's heat, because that's going to keep the germination moving along quickly.
Yep.
Then the seeds sprout. Yep. And then we can, how long do we let them grow until we transfer them into a smaller pot?
Or a bigger pot.
Bigger pot.
So the first two leaves that come up are called the cotyledon leaves, and they're always rounded. They're really, in fact, no matter what you plant, it's called the seed leaves, and they're almost all look the same. What you do then is wait for the next set of leaves to come up, which they call the true leaves, and they're going to reflect the shape of the leaves on the mature plant. So most tomato plants have the, you'd call it toothy, serrated edge leaves, and that you will see that serration coming up on that first set of leaves that comes up, that comes out of the center of the plant after those first two rounded ones show. Then I would let those true leaves develop and let that plant, because a lot of people listening to this are going to be growing these in a windowsill. Mm-hmm. If you're planting actually one seed per container, and you can just move them up into maybe a 6-inch pot, and that's really the only transfer you need. And once that little seedling gets to a couple of inches tall, you really do have a space of weeks to be able to move that along into the next size pot up. Tomatoes are pretty unfussy about that. One really good point is anytime you transplant a tomato plant from one pot to another, they benefit from being planted deeply. So make the whole it's not like some plants where shrubbery where they say plant this in the ground at the exact level that it was in the pot. For tomatoes, you always try to embed them into the soil so that you're covering as much of the stem as possible. And then any part of the stem under the soil will root and form a stronger plant, and that also minimizes them getting too stretched and leggy and upward growing.
That's so interesting. So should you plant it deep enough that even you're covering a leaf, or just plant it up until that first couple of leaves?
Right. Just right up until that first couple of leaves.
Okay. That's really interesting. And how many – for a 6-inch pot, is it one set of leaves, like one seed per pot, or I can put a couple of them in one 6-inch pot?
When I'm planting and I'm trying to do seedlings to sell, I plant 50 seeds in a 1.5-inch square. Okay. So that's where I'm saying the plants will come up well. They don't really fight with each other. And then later on, you can separate these into individual plants and put them in containers. So if you have lots of space and you want to grow lots of plants, you can use one container and grow all of your seedlings and then separate them out after they're a couple of inches tall into the individual 4 to 6 to 8 inch, whatever size pot you want to grow them on into maturity. So it gives you a lot of flexibility. You don't really need much space at all to start an awful lot of tomato seedlings.
I love that. Okay, so wait till they're a couple inches tall, and then that's when you have to worry about separating them out.
Yep, exactly.
And then tomatoes, the more sunlight, the better, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they like photosynthesis. That the sun shining on the leaves makes for the plants to be more compact. It also helps for the flavors and the sugars to develop a little bit more. And it also helps the yield, because the more sun you get, the more flowers the plant will put out. The more flowers that the plant puts out, the more those will set and become little tomatoes afterwards.
Is there anything you need to do with the flowers, particularly once you see them budding and opening, or you just let them do their thing?
They do their thing, because nature is pretty amazing the way they've developed certain types of flowers. And tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, even beans and peas are what's called perfect flowered, meaning you've got the anthers or the pollen in the male part, and it is applied to the tip of the pistil, which is the style. So they pollinate as the flowers open. And that is why really when people talk about being depressed that there's not a lot of bees around. Bees, fortunately, are not necessary to get good tomato crops. Now, what you don't have indoors is breeze. And so sometimes the pollination is helped by the gentle breezes outside. But what you can do indoors is just each day gently, because the flowers can fall off. And once you lose a flower, you lose the potential of the tomato. Just flick the little blossom clusters maybe twice a day gently. And what that does is it helps move the pollen. It helps maybe embed the pollen into the tip of the pistil, and you'll get better pollination at the end of the day. You need that pollen to transport down that little tiny tube in the middle and to form the tomato and to make it grow and then turn red or yellow depending on which variety that you're growing.
That's so interesting. So yeah. You can just never touch your tomato plant, but if you want to help things along, flicking the flower buds is like helping the pollen settle in the flower plant.
Yes, exactly. And some people will take an electric toothbrush and just gently touch it to where the flower cluster attaches to the stem. And just that little bit of vibration will be just enough to help that happen.
That's so cool. Oh my gosh, I had no idea.
See, all this stuff that people just take for granted. Plants are just fascinating, and they're endlessly fascinating because there's always something more to learn about how they work.
What about, I read somewhere, determinate versus indeterminate, different types of tomatoes?
Right. So for small space, small scale apartment growers, you're probably, unless you're outside with a balcony and you have a place for it to droop everywhere, mm-hmm. you're probably going to avoid indeterminate tomatoes. So indeterminate means they grow forever, they grow out, they grow tall, 10 to 20 feet if given the space outside. Determinate are plants that, if anybody has ever grown Roma or taxi, they form a ball about 2 to 3 feet in diameter. So even determinate varieties are a bit more than you'd want to handle, certainly if you're indoors. You could grow them out on a balcony or a deck. What's not, dwarfs is the third major type, which are like determinants, but they taste a little bit better and they don't produce everything all at once. The micro dwarfs actually are the ones that are these just unique varieties. The foliage looks different. They're just ultra small and ultra short. So,
got it. So those are determinate and indeterminate are actually all within the group of dwarf and micro dwarfs. Like each one is a different type of tomato.
Yes, you essentially have.
I got it.
Four different like distinct growth patterns on tomatoes, and there are, you know, a geneticist, or if you want to go into lots of detail, there are subtypes in between. But for what this audience and most of us as gardeners need to know only is, if I've got a lot of space outside, I grow an indeterminate. If I've got a decent sized balcony and I can put a 5-gallon pot on it, I can grow a determinate. If I'm going to confine my activities to a sunny indoor window or a small space outside, I probably want to stick to a micro dwarf or maybe a dwarf, but probably the micro types.
Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free plant parent personality test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
And that is why I think, to me, there is a lot of urgency in expanding the color range in the interest of these. Because when it comes right down to it, Maria, everything that I try to do, and I think garden writers try to do, is to get everybody that can to grow something.
Totally.
Not only because it's delicious, but it's fun, it's interesting, you learn something. And it actually takes up a lot of your attention from like the time you plant that seed until the time you put your last tomato that you harvest on your salad. It is something else fascinating to do during the day that really should be appreciated and enjoyed.
And nothing beats the smell of a tomato plant.
No. Right. Yeah, it's so distinctive. And, you know, some people, so it's a love-hate thing. In fact, Americans didn't come to love the tomato until the mid-1800s. And one of the presiding theories on why that may be true is that the tomato foliage is so rank-smelling to some people that they think nothing good can come off that plant that I would want to eat. So it's a very polarizing smell.
That's so funny. I didn't realize that because I'm just obsessed with the tomato plant smell.
I do too. Yeah. Now, you don't want to get a tomato plant stain on your t-shirt because tomato plant foliage leaves indelible greenish, yellowish, brownish marks that never come out no matter what you do to it. So I have a whole set of what I call my tomato plant t-shirts when I work out in the yard because it ruins them. And then, you know, my wife Susan yells at me for wearing my good shirt in the garden. And I said, well, it's just another tomato shirt.
Right. Growing collection.
That's right.
So here's another question. So my mom says that the Italians tell her to you wait if you have an outdoor space to plant your tomatoes after Mother's Day. So what's the timing? I mean, I know we're in March already in terms of, is there kind of a deadline you have to start germinating seeds by in order to transplant and all that good stuff? Or are there certain dates we should be looking for?
Well, first of all, I think any type of, I love what your mother said, because gardening is so chock full of folklore. Mm-hmm. And most of the folklore works for the people who share it. And what's never been untangled yet is to do the control studies around all of that, because it's, you know, it's not much fun to think I want to prove or disprove all this stuff. So my view is let's throw it all into the pot and then just analyze it. So what I've found is that a good rule of thumb is that, number one, tomato plants grown outdoors, they don't like it when their feet are cold, and they will get killed by frost. So you need to look at where you are, and you think about when can I safely put that plant out so that it's not going to get killed by frost. But the ground is starting to get a little bit warm, because if you put a tomato plant in and it's 34 degrees for a week, it's not going to die, but it's going to do absolutely nothing except be really peeved at you for right. putting its poor little self out there, and it's not going to do anything. So what I do is, let's say I'm going to plant my plants out May 1st. I'm going to work back a month and think that means I'm going to be transplanting my plants that have germinated into the next larger container on April 1st, and I work back a month from that, meaning I'm going to be planting my seeds on March 1st. Now, this is close to a time I would use down here in very warm, long-growing season North Carolina. A lot of my friends, you know, Virginia, New York, North, out in Seattle, they're just getting to where it's coming time to plant their plants, because here it is, March 21st, which means you're transplanting April 21st, and you're putting out around mid-May to May 21st, which is absolutely perfect.
Right. And okay, so we're not too late to the game.
Not at all. But people can try to keep that in mind. It's a good rule of thumb. 1 month from seed to transplant, 1 month from transplant to putting out. And if they keep that easy, 1 month to do this, 1 month to do that, it really helps them to guide when the best time is to plant their seeds.
I love it. And then once you put it out, how long can you expect before the tomato flowers start, I guess, blooming?
Sure. So this is where it gets really tricky, because gardening is so absent of absolutes. And
totally. That's a great quote.
Yeah, and I can take the same variety. Let's say one that I really love. So Cherokee Purple, why do I love it? Because I get to name it. I mean, that's kind of my lucky tomato.
I know, right?
So I take Cherokee Purple and I think that variety, if grown by my friend in Michigan, my friend in Seattle, my friend in New Hampshire, my friend in Virginia, they're all going to have slightly different experiences than I have, but they will all have slightly different experiences in different seasons if they treat it slightly differently in terms of how often they water it and how often they feed it. So anytime you look at a packet of seeds and see days to maturity and things like that, you have to think this is a generality. And there's probably a big error bar associated with it. So a 75-day tomato could ripen in 60 in a warm season. It could take 90 if we have a lot of cloudy days and it's very, very cool. But as a rule of thumb, if you grow these micro dwarf red robin types, they're pretty quick. So 45 days or so from when you put it into that final pot, that's about a month and a half.
Right.
That's when you should start getting some ripe tomatoes. If you're out on the deck or your patio growing maybe one of the dwarf types, they range from maybe a 60-day or 2 months from the time you put it out there in the pot to maybe 80 for some of the later ones. When I think of tomatoes, varieties, I think of people. We all have different hair color, eye color, personalities, voices. And each specific tomato variety actually carries such a unique set of attributes.
How many types of tomatoes would you say in your career have you probably grown?
Yeah, probably around 4,000 or so.
That's wild. Oh, my God.
And especially since I've started leading this worldwide breeding project, I'm probably grow 150 to 250 types a year. And they're all in various stages of development and stabilization. So they're all like distinct varieties that are on their way to somewhere else. So I've gotten to decide that, well, whether it's yellow, green, purple, red, orange, I can't tie a flavor to a color. It really is that particular variety. And so I could have a sweet, sour, tart, bland orange or yellow or red or bicolor. Once people get this, and if you're really one who loves tomatoes, this becomes a lifelong pursuit that will just drive your spouse utterly crazy if they don't get it as much as you do. Now, one of the things I do want to get back to, so you got your plant growing well.
Yes.
You want to make sure that it doesn't dry out. So tomatoes don't like wet feet. So if you're growing indoors and you have a saucer underneath, one thing you really don't want to see is water in that saucer. Okay. You want to be able to let the surface get maybe a little bit dry, maybe stick your finger in and you can still feel some moisture down an inch. You want to give it kind of a balanced plant food, maybe every couple of weeks or so. And it should tell you that it's happy by the fact that it's not drooping, mm-hmm. by the fact that the color is good and green, and that you get flowering and you get fruit set. And I would think the other thing to watch for is anybody who is familiar with indoor gardening knows that you get a different set of pests. So watch for things like aphids, watch for things like whitefly or mealybugs or anything that would understand that this tomato plant is very succulent and they can land on it and suck the juices out of it. And, you know, just use good plant hygiene and pest control that you would do on any other houseplant right. to keep it. But just like growing outside, it's all about observing it and taking a look at it and, you know, reading your plant and keeping in mind that if you're embarking on this for the first time this year, mm-hmm. don't bite off too much, because the whole point of gardening is to have it be fun and as stress-free as possible.
And a learning experience. You don't have to be perfect at it.
And the thing is, you won't be. And in fact, you will. Gardeners do make mistakes every year mm-hmm. and learn from them. And each year improves, although different mistakes will emerge. But if you start slow and learn a little bit each year and build up to it, it actually is better than going a little bit too far in and being too ambitious, losing the ability to keep control of everything, and then having it be a disappointing experience, which means you'll be less likely to embark on it again next year. I really like the slow burn.
Do you look down at people who buy the tomato plants from the shop kind of already started? Do you think that you need to grow from seed or?
No. So my opinions on this would be you're always going to find the greatest variety if you grow from seed.
Right.
But not everybody has the time and the space to do so, or even perhaps the attention to detail that particularly takes. Everybody is not for everything. And so what you do is you find what parts of this you're either good at or have a passion for and go for it. And for those parts you'd rather somebody else do the work, go get those plants. The key is being able to identify when a plant has been treated well. So you don't want to go to, you know, there are certain stores where the plants are outdoors all day and at the heat of the day they all wilt and look terrible
right.
and the person runs around with the hose and revitalizes them. Well, if those plants have been grown and allowed to wilt too many times, they're already kind of stressed by the time you get it.
Right.
So maybe a farmer's market, you know, somebody who's got a nice selection of really interesting varieties and really healthy looking plants that have good foliage color. I think it's perfectly fine. I mean, my first garden in 1981 was a 6-pack of Better Boys and a 6-pack of Romas that we bought at the place down the street, and they knocked our socks off. So
right.
it's
just because I just say that just from I loved what you just said about doing what you can and growing and taking it step by step. And I think for some people that's going to mean jumping in and growing from seed. And I'm very excited to take what you've taught me today and
sure.
apply that. But also, it's totally okay to still just do what you can. Just have the end game be try growing tomatoes this year, whether it be from the store, a 6-pack, or from seed. Just try
yeah.
it. Try, experiment, and have fun with the journey and process.
And I think at the end of the year, you will have planting mix embedded under your fingernails. And
exactly.
it doesn't matter which activity during the year has put it there. Seed starting, seed transplanting, that's kind of the key to the game. And I think keep a journal, take pictures at the end of the year when things, you know, when you're not getting the sun anymore and it doesn't seem like it's time where things are going to work, write things down.
Mm-hmm.
What worked well? What didn't work quite as well? What may I want to try again next year? What do I email Craig and ask because such and such didn't go as well? What can he tell me to try something different next year? And can he send me any of these weird new seeds that he's playing with? So these are the things you think about when you're kind of revitalizing yourself in between all of this activity.
I love it. So can we wrap up by you sharing that amazing story that you sent me, especially since we were talking with my mom this episode also about our Italian heritage? I'd love for you to tell that amazing story about the packet of seeds that you got your hands on.
Yeah, so this has happened to me a lot through the years. So Cherokee Purple came to me this way, Lillian's Yellow Heirloom, Anna Russian. And I've been into this since, I guess, the mid-80s. So you would think by now, you know, 20, 30 years, not that you've seen it all, but those people who are still holding all of these wonderful family heirlooms would have found you and sent you things by now. But I think I spoke at a Mother Earth news fair up north. Might have been in Pennsylvania, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a fellow in the audience, or a friend who was in the audience. I haven't got it quite clear, but he lives in Connecticut. I'm not sure if he came down or not, but his name is Mr. Swokla, S-W-O-K-L-A. And he sent me an email and he says, you know, I've got some seeds that have been in the freezer. And they were my mother's tomato that she brought her from Italy. And I'm just curious as to whether, you know, grow them out if you could. Do they look like anything you're familiar with? So I asked him to send me a few seeds. I was very, you know, you always accept seeds like this very graciously because people are sharing part of their life with you.
Yeah.
So I grew them and they were a wildly vigorous tall plant that produced these perfect, they look like the top of those Russian buildings that have the onion shape. They were perfectly heart-shaped, pink, cut them open, absolutely delicious. So I started an email exchange with Mr. Swokla about this tomato, and I said, you know, you sent this to me, and when I'm sent a great tomato, I feel like what I need to do now is to make sure that everybody in the world can share the joy that I did. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to send it to my friend Mike, who owns a seed company in Oregon, and he'll grow it out, and then you and he will be in contact. And it will be in a seed catalog along with the story. So it turns out this tomato is now called the Cancelmo Family Heirloom, C-A-N-C-E-L-M-O. Mm-hmm. It's sold by Victory Seed Company. And Mr. Swokla's mother brought these over from Italy in 1917. And wow. Here we are, 2018, 101 years later, that tomato, which has never been in a seed catalog anywhere in the world, is now available for people to buy from Victory and to grow in their gardens. And when people come in those gardens, they can tell people that story and maybe get a niece or a nephew or a cousin hooked on this, and then they'll become a gardener. And you've not only grown a tomato, but you've grown a new gardener. And the circle is kind of complete at that point. And everybody's kind of done their job to bring a new variety into the world.
That's so beautiful. In the houseplant world, people talk a lot about the Pilea peperomioides plant, where it grows babies and you share the babies. It's like nicknamed the friendship plant. And I feel like tomatoes are the friendship plant of the garden, kind of, when you think about it. Or the story just reminds me so much of that, how you can just keep sharing seeds and developing young gardeners, but also just sharing your heritage. I mean, that's such a beautiful image.
Yeah. You know, when I worked in the company, there was a woman who was a gardener. She brought me a piece of a Neomerica, a walking iris. And that was 20 years ago. And it's thrived and it flowers and it's created babies. And must be hundreds of friends now have pieces of that original Neomerica that wow. that woman brought me from work. So that, to me, that's been the perfect pass along plant because it just kind of it produces its own little plants on these stems after it flowers. But yeah, it's I think it doesn't matter if it's house plants or fruit trees or tomatoes or potatoes. There really is stories behind everything we grow, and there's joy in the growing of it. And I think it draws us all together. And in a world where there's a lot of reasons to not be terribly happy all the time, this is a bubble. This is a space where you can be happy. And I kind of hide there these days. This is where I just find my peace.
Oh, man, I love that so much. Well, thank you for sharing all your knowledge with us today. This was so helpful. I'm so excited to get growing.
Good. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I had a wonderful time, and I'll wait for those questions to start coming in someday.
Yay. Oh, where can we reach you? Where can everyone reach you?
Sure. Well, my website is just my first and last name.com, www.craiglahoulier.com, and my email is just nctomatoman, all one word, @gmail.com. What I try to do is Instagram, blog, tweet, and just, you know, working on my third book, which is going to be the story of the dwarf tomato breeding project. And, you know, keeping busy. My wife quilts and I'm having fun doing this and everything's good.
Isn't Craig just the best? After our conversation, Craig ended up sending me a whole bunch of various tomato seeds that he's working on. So I will keep you all posted on my tomato growing journey this summer on Instagram. I think I'm going to grow half of them in my apartment and half from Fiala Farm, which is my parents' front yard where my mom has a thriving garden. So speaking of Fiala Farm, up next is a short conversation between me and my mom about our Italian heritage, how that has influenced her garden and some tips and tricks she's picked up along the way from various Italians in her life. Welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio, Mom.
Hi, everyone.
I feel like it doesn't get more quintessential Italian than growing tomatoes in your personal garden in the summer.
You can always tell who's Italian when you walk by their yard. And when you see those tomato steaks, you know that a good Italian lives there.
So what has been your experience growing tomatoes growing up with Nonni and Nunu and in Italy, and how have you kind of carried that tradition throughout?
Okay, well, my parents were immigrants from Italy, and they were from farm families. And tomatoes were part of sustenance in life. You grew your tomatoes, you ate your tomatoes when they were peak, you canned your tomatoes, you jarred your tomatoes. Nobody used cans, you jarred your tomatoes. And you would have tomatoes for the winter until those fresh tomatoes came back. It was just a cycle of life. Tomatoes was just like a cycle of life in an Italian family. So as a child in Queens, New York, my parents had a home that actually had an extra lot attached to it. And my mother and father dug that lot out and created their garden. And my mother would plant about 60 tomato plants each year. She had many varieties. We never had cherries. We always had plums and round beefsteak tomatoes. But we never had cherries. And the tomato process was quite the process because you needed stakes, you needed cord, twine. My father used to use twine. And they would go out every morning at 6 o'clock in the morning and tend to the plants. And my father would go to work. My father would go to work during the week at 6:30, but my mother would go out to the yard and tend to her plants at that time before the kids woke up. And during the summer when we were home, my mother was always in the garden early in the morning before we woke up. And then again in the evening, she would water in the evening.
Is there something to be said about watering that early? Is that an Italian thing, or that was just part of her daily habit and kind of almost meditation, it sounds like?
I don't think she was watering in the morning. I think she was tending to everything in the morning. Mm-hmm. She was stringing her tomatoes. I mean, her tomatoes could have been grown in a military camp. You could see through the lines. Everything was on a stake. It wasn't sloppy. It was very clean. You could walk between the plants. It was very clean. Her tomato plants were geometric. It was clean.
Yeah,
and that takes a lot of work. That doesn't happen. You have to be out there regularly touching, stretching.
Pruning.
Not necessarily pruning. She didn't prune her tomatoes, but she did string her tomatoes up.
And they grow so fast, I guess you're constantly having to tie them higher and higher and higher.
Well, she had full sun, and she would import her seeds from Italy. When we would go to Italy for the summer, my parents would send me and my sister to Europe to our family farm during the summer. My mother would come back with packets of seeds of all sorts. It was illegal, but she did it anyway. We would hide the seeds. Sometimes she would put the seeds on her children to get through customs. But we had our own seeds from Italy. She would bring radicchio from Italy, and she would bring tomatoes from Italy. She would also bring dried mushrooms from Italy. Sometimes
you guys would hide them in like the pants of your underwear, in your pants and your underwear and your luggage, right?
We would travel with undershirts on that had two pockets, and in the pockets we would have seeds and gold.
She turned you guys into little seed mules.
Seeds and gold. So we would travel, and no one would question a child. And we wouldn't have to pay taxes on whatever bracelet my mother bought.
Nothing was getting in the way of Nonni and her tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So what were some Italian tips that you learned from her that you now tend in your garden?
Prepare your soil. That's the most important thing. She would prepare her soil from the, when the fall started and the soil was empty and the tomatoes were picked, she would begin to prepare her soil. My father, back in the day, would make wine. All of his grape skins would be thrown into the garden along with fertilizer they would get from some farm. And believe me, the yard stunk for a day or two. But you would prepare your soil in the fall, and then you prepare it again in the spring. But preparing your soil was the most important thing for her. They did not have a sprinkler system. They had a hose and a sprinkler attachment.
Right, the attachment. I remember that.
That went back that and you forth, would clamp, back right. and forth. Yeah. So she did not have fancy irrigation, but she did have very good soil. You also need to have your stakes ready. And just be ready, because tomatoes are work. They're not something you could just plant and let it go. There's a lot of things you could have fun planting and let it go, but not tomatoes. Tomatoes are work.
They're work, but they're worth it.
They're worth it. So in our yard, this year I planted, I think it was 8 plants.
8 or 10, I think.
Yeah, 8 plants in the front of, because this year we did the front yard garden. We planted 8 plants in the front, 2 cherries, 2 yellow, 2 big boys, 2 early American. I don't
remember. Some king. There was some king, yeah, in one of the names.
I don't remember the names of them. I just picked them because I liked them and they looked healthy in the store. So I picked them and I planted them. And quite frankly, I had bought stakes and they weren't big enough.
Because at the end, you had a wall of tomatoes. It was like a wall.
We had a huge wall of tomatoes. So what I did was interesting. I was really struggling. Well, I was really struggling with the foliage of the tomatoes because they really liked where I planted them. They were so happy. These tomatoes plants were so happy and they were shooting off so many greens and branches that it was hard to manage it. And the stakes that you bought at the local store, I'm not going to name names, but they were short. They were for like tomato midgets. So one day I was with my niece at a beauty pageant and my car was parked under a highway. And as I was leaving, I looked out and I saw some construction guys had discarded these long metal rods that are used to build highways that have holes in them. And they were about 8 feet long. And I said, oh my goodness, nobody's using this. And they were just discarded on the side of the parking lot. And I said, well, maybe my tomato plants could use them. So I took them home. They barely fit in my Fiat 500, but I took them home and I planted them and they solved my problem because they were tall enough for my plants and I was able to retrofit my tomato plants. I put these additional rods in and then it gave some support to the tomato plants, but I did have like an 8-foot wall. I don't know what kind of plants and what kind of dirt and how happy they were, but there was a lot of tomato plants going on.
My mom is famous for finding things on the side of the road and making them into something amazing in our house.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what you do.
Repurposed, yeah.
That's what you do. You know, I'm a great recycler.
So what about Italian folklore about planting tomatoes? Like, talk about when you go to Home Depot, who do you find?
So when I go to Home Depot, I do buy my tomatoes at Home Depot. I do not, at this point in my life, plant tomatoes from seed. I'm not that patient. When April,
and that's okay. No, you
when
don't need
April
to.
Comes, I get very itchy to start my garden, and off I go to Home Depot, and everything is so lush and green there, and I get very excited. My husband gives me point cards. You know, with certain banks, you get points, and you can transfer your points to credit cards.
Oh, yeah, into like little credit cards.
Little
yeah.
credit cards. So I get Home Depot credit cards in the spring. So I just go wild with those Home Depot cards. Yes, I go wild with those Home Depot cards. And I buy tomatoes and lettuces and eggplants, whatever looks good, I buy it all. And I bring it all home and I figure out where to put it. And so when I'm picking tomatoes, unlike the rest of the vegetables, I always look for the Italians in the bunch. And you can always find an Italian if you look hard in the tomato section. And then I cozy up along them and I ask them a question. And they will then teach me everything they know about tomatoes. I do it every time I go to a Home Depot or any garden center. If I go to the tomato section, I always cozy up along an old Italian.
You make a plant friend.
I make a plant friend.
You make an Italian plant friend.
Yes, I make an Italian plant friend. I go into the Italian, you know, we speak in Italian. I'll say, oh, tu parli italiano, and that's when it all pours out. and they give me what their parents did and what they do, and it's very helpful. So I recommend everyone should run out and meet an Italian in the tomato section.
Meet an Italian to help you with your tomatoes. And what was the other old wives' tale that you use? What? Oh, you don't plant your tomatoes before.
Oh, so this past year, this is a funny story. I'm in Home Depot making friends with this old guy. And he's telling me, oh, they look nice, but you know, can't get them. I said, I'm going to get them. Look, it's so warm. Last year, New York had such a warm spring. I said, it's so warm. We could plant these tomatoes. So he goes, no, never before Mother's Day. And I said, but it's been 70 degrees for 2 weeks. Winter's over. You know, it's over. He says, not before Mother's Day. He was very strict about this Mother's Day business. I said, okay, well, you know, I'm just going to test it this year. So I came home and I planted my tomatoes in the ground.
Before Mother's
Day. Before Mother's Day, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 weeks before Mother's Day. It was April still, but it was a very warm April in New York. And I'm looking at them, and they're looking happy. And then the next day, it's 40 degrees. And then the next day, it's 40 degrees. And then the next day, it's 38 degrees. So I went out, I dug my tomato plants out of the ground, I put them in pots and put them on my dining room table for the next 3 weeks. And I took care of them in the dining room, put them by the window, so they got some light. But my tomatoes had to live inside with me for 3 weeks before Mother's Day. And then on Mother's Day, like a good Italian, I planted them outside on Mother's Day. But never again am I going to do that stupid thing. No tomatoes before Mother's Day.
Anything that you particularly look for when you're at the store buying the tomato plant?
I look for a healthy green plant.
Healthy green foliage?
Healthy green foliage. I always buy plants that are small. I don't, you know, sometimes you can buy plants that are like 2 feet tall and have little green tomatoes on it. I don't do that.
No, you buy, I buy six-inch six-packs.
That's for 4-inch six-packs. And I plant them. But they've already gone from the seed to the plant. When I do plant a tomato, this is important, the hairy stem on the tomato can create great roots. So when you plant a tomato, you don't just plant the root ball in the ground. You plant it kind of sideways in the ground and then kind of bend the tomato plant up. So there's minimum stem when you plant your tomato. You almost plant it up to that first round of green leaves, and the tomato will grow more roots and you will have a better plant.
That's what Craig says too.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had incredible fruit. I had 200-300 tomatoes this year.
At least. Yeah, it was amazing. We ate a lot of tomatoes this summer. So what is one lesson that you've learned from your garden or your tomatoes that you're excited to re-experience this year?
Well, tomatoes are one of the few things that can give you something all year. Like, I did not jar my tomatoes this year. This year, I might try to jar them and see what happens. My mother would jar tomatoes when the season came, and she would spend 3 days in the basement boiling tomatoes and then boiling tomatoes in jars and sealing tomatoes, and then she would put them in the cantina, and we had tomatoes, fresh tomatoes, that didn't taste like anything you buy from a can. I don't care if it's San Marzano. I don't care if it's fancy, blah, blah, blah. When you got tomatoes that come from your yard and you put it in a jar successfully and you take it out in the middle of winter, you're eating fresh garden tomatoes. So tomatoes can give you a lot all year round. You really can't do that with lettuces. You can't do that. I mean, you could put eggplants under oil or vinegar. You can vinegar vegetables, but you don't vinegar a tomato. You cook a tomato, you put basil or rosemary or whatever it is you like in your tomatoes, and then you take it out in the winter and you have that fresh mouth of tomato, which is, you know, a beautiful thing.
Well, that's nice too that you experience it in different seasons and in different capacities, you know?
It's not
the gift
just,
that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it's
in
not
different
just,
forms.
It's not just August.
Yeah, it blooms in different ways.
It blooms in different ways. You can have a great meal with, you know, your sauce, or you could add it to a stew, or, you know, it's just great. If you do it well, that might be this year's goal, to learn how to can tomatoes.
Yeah, we're going to can this year. That'll be fun.
Or not can. Can is the wrong word.
Jar.
Jar.
We're going to jar this year.
We're going to jar this year. And cool. I have a couple of my mother's friends that are still alive and they are nearby, and I'm sure they'd be happy to teach me how to do it.
Oh, that would be fun. That's another episode.
Yes.
How to jar tomatoes.
Yes.
Stay tuned, listeners.
Okay. Well, it was nice talking to everyone.
All right. Thanks, Mom.
Keep
love you.
Blooming and growing.
Thanks again for having a listen today. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Bloom and Grow Radio on iTunes and leave us a review. If you want to follow the Bloom and Grow journey and are interested in more plant tips, give us a follow on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio and visit www.bloomandgrowradio.com to join the email list. And please let me know what you want to hear in the future episodes. I'm here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right house plants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.